This meeting is now being recorded.
We are now in session. Thank you all very much. I'll remind you as we start, this is a public meeting. We are obviously have many interested listeners, which is appreciated, and we are being recorded. Thank you all very much for coming. I figured out a way to solve the drought, and that is we just have an in-person meeting of Tickback, because for our last few in-person meetings, storms come in as we meet. Figuratively, maybe two, but so I appreciate you all coming. The last in-person meeting we had in February was put off by rain. I think we had five or six members in the room, so I think it's appropriate we all meet today. I think our agenda is very manageable today within the time limits that we've set. Just in case any of you care, a good many of us, at least half this committee, was in town yesterday for related meetings. We were at another meeting this morning. Judge McCabe was chairing a meeting related to interpreter funding issues, which brought more of us into town, and we have a financial planning subcommittee meeting, fiscal planning, at 2 o'clock. So most of us were here. I thought, therefore, it was a good use of our time just to stay in the same room rather than separate and meet by phone. But that brings with it the logistical issue of making good use of your time, which we're trying to do. So I appreciate that. You all have the agenda before you. We're going to, as we move through that agenda, there's just going to be some slight logistical changes as to where we discuss items together. We're going to start off in just a minute, Zlatko and Sherry and Judge Earl, Sherry Carter and Judge Earl. I think, and if you haven't noticed already, the agenda has changed slightly in the sense that built in from 1:30 to 2, an opportunity for committee members to engage in discussion of general concern. So I wanted to make sure we had that time for committee members to engage in that discussion. With that, I'm going to start by asking Randy to take roll call.
Judge Campbell.
Present.
Martin.
Here.
Long. Judge Bill.
Here.
Judge Earl.
Here.
Judge Herman.
Here.
Judge Heinrich.
Here.
Judge Johnson.
Here.
Judge Kaufman.
Here.
Judge Maragonda.
Here.
Judge McCabe.
Here.
Judge Sanders?
Yes.
She's my phone.
Ms. Carter?
Here.
Mr. Chatter?
Here.
Ms. Fleming?
Here.
Mr. Hammer?
Here.
Mr. Harrigan?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Roddy?
Here.
Ms. Romero Soul?
Present.
Mr. Taylor?
Here.
Ms. Ukraine Capital Bianco?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
And advisory members, Ms. Chappell, Ms. Tidwell,
here,
Mr. Wardlaw, and Mr. Theodorovich.
Here.
And this is Jeffrey Lewis by phone. You missed me.
Thank you.
Okay. I do remind everybody, please, those that are listening and on phone, you're more than welcome to mute us, but please don't put us on hold, because if you do that, we then find out what type of music you like to listen to, and it, obviously we'd have to cut you off, so we do appreciate that. I do want to take a moment, by the way, and welcome our newest member, Judge Brazil from L.A. Welcome, Judge Brazil. We look forward to having you with us. It was just a change, a logistical change, given the change in their PJ status, and so Judge Brazil is the APJ in L.A. Obviously, you all know Ms. Carter sitting next to him, so that's the newest face in the room, and we're glad to have you. Thank you very much. So that takes us to our first agenda item. I'm going to first ask if, assuming everybody has had a moment to review the minutes of the February 9th meeting, if there's a motion to approve those minutes.
Move approval.
All right, move approval.
In second.
Second. Having moved and approved. Second, any opposition? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are approved. All right, moving to public comment, we have two individuals who originally had asked to make public comment, Chad Finke from Alameda and Judge Jacobson from Alameda. I talked to Chad. Chad came in the room a few minutes ago. Judge Jacobson is currently in a meeting in the building, and I wanted to be as fair as I could to both of them. Yesterday, they presented at a subcommittee meeting, and I gave them both 5 minutes. Judge Jacobson had asked Chad to appear on his behalf, so Judge Jacobson, rather than hold us up, it asked Chad to take the time necessary. Yesterday, they both had 5 minutes of public comment. I talked to Chad. He's being very gracious. I told Chad he could take Judge Jacobson's five for a total of 10. But Chad says he'd be able to get his comments done in five. So with that, we'll turn to Mr. Finke for public comment.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to provide public comment. For those of you who are on the funding methodology subcommittee, I apologize for the repetition and for you having to listen to this field for a second day in a row. I just wanted to let you all know why are we here making public comment today. It is not, perhaps, as you might expect, to advocate for the population to judge ratio model that we circulated in late March. We do think that that's a good model, but I'm not here today to advocate for that. What I'm really here to advocate for is the concept of what Judge Jacobson and I and our bench and our executive team have been referring to as a pause and study. By pause and study, we mean essentially deferring the implementation of the fifth year of WAFM, and basically rather than implement the fifth year of WAFM to allocate to each of the courts in fiscal year 17-18 the same amount of allocation that we received in the current fiscal year, or in the alternative, if that's not possible, to have reached some sort of an agreement then that any court that is found to be a donor court in 17-18 would have their WAFM reduction offset by the $10 million state level reserve. And that way there would be those courts who are going into 17-18 expecting an increase through WAFM would still get their increase, but no one would take a hit. Those of us who would normally take a hit through WAFM would just instead have that offset in $10 million. I'm aware that the government code then says that in the fiscal year subsequent to that, we would have to then replenish. Sort of our take on that is we look, if you added up everyone's WAFM cuts last year, it's about $8.5 million. So taking $8.5 million off of $1.85 billion in next year is a relatively small amount, and that would at least ensure that going into 17-18, no court takes another cut. So why are we making this pitch at this time? It is because our court, I suspect many others, particularly those who have been donor courts for all or most of the years of WAFM, are probably have either flown off the cliff or, like us, are about to go off the cliff on July 1. Not to belabor the point, because I know every single person in this room has a tale of woe from his or her court. Our particular tale of woe is along the, you know, it's an old story, right? It's layoffs, it's closure of courthouses, it's reduction in services. You all know the drill. You've been there. You've either been there back before WAFM or you're heading there now, you know, post-WAFM. But we are about to go off the cliff, and we feel that we owe it to our staff and the citizens in our county and our court users who are being affected to come in here and make whatever pitch we can to try to avoid taking that fifth year of cuts that's really going to send us off. The reason why I think it is particularly dire this year is we strongly suspect, I was just in the same meeting with Martin, and he's telling us, you know, don't be too negative, but I strongly suspect that what Governor Brown said in January, which is that we're going to get a flat budget, is going to be exactly what we see in July. I hope I'm wrong. I know we all hope I'm wrong. But if it is indeed a flat budget, that will mean that for those of us who are donors, this year of WAFM will be pure cut. There won't be any offset to mitigate the cut. So last year, through WAFM, we should have taken about a, $2.5 million cut. Because there was a bit of new money, our cut wound up being about $500,000. So this year, if there's no new money, we're probably looking at between $2 and $3 million in cuts. And so it's just, it's pure cut this year. So I know I'm talking fast. I'm trying to stay within that 5 minutes. Why then are we not, I know one of the concerns that Judge Jacobson and I have heard, it came up yesterday, is, well, we all agreed 5 years of law. So why not just wait and do the pause and study after year, in year six? Again, you know, part of that is because we don't feel that we can wait. We think that because it is likely to be a flat budget, it's a good time to do it. We all made it through this year. I mean, I don't think it was probably easy for anyone, but everyone managed to make it through this year with what we got, what our allocations were for 16-17. So we know we can do it. Those of us who are looking forward at a year of cuts, we don't know we can do it. So if we retain the funding at the level it was this year, at least nobody loses anymore in 17-18. I think that's basically my pitch. I know Judge Jacobson had some additional facts that he added in yesterday. I think those, you know, again, most of you heard them. But again, that's that's our basic ask, is support from this committee. I realize that procedurally we are not on the agenda, so this, I'm not asking the item for any of you today. We are definitely hoping to have this as an item that can be voted on either at the next FMS meeting or the next kickback meeting or both. However, there was a long discussion of procedure yesterday, and I'm not sure I completely followed all the ins and outs. But wherever it's appropriate to have this on for a discussion and vote, we hope to do that in time for July 1. And so we'll work with the co-chairs to make that happen. So today I'm really just hoping you hear me. You have. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. That concludes our public comment as far as those present in the room. Where is there? Were two written comments, public comments submitted? Those should be in your materials. Just want to make sure everybody has a chance to have those. One of them was a brief email, I think, as recently as yesterday, related to Small Court Dependency Council Working Group. And the other was a written email earlier related to small court funding. So I'm going to make sure everybody has those. Okay? All right. That concludes our public comments portion, and we're now moving to informational items, and therefore that's item number one on your agenda. And I turn to
the very end.
Right, and that's one of those changes I talked about making. We're going to go, you see item number one on discussion of possible actions, recommendation from R&E, but that ties in nicely with the information item that's at the only item on the informational agenda at the end, so we're going to start there and then merge the two with the help of Judge Earl and Ms. Carter and Blasco.
Hi, thank you, Judge Conklin. So let's start by looking at the very last page, so we'll start at the end. It is the Software Trust Fund Condition Statements. I think before we start talking about spending money in any of our funds, it was important to understand sort of the future and what the future for the Software Trust Fund is in terms of its structural needs. So when everybody's good look around, make sure everybody's gotten to that page 76. And I'll start turning your attention to certain columns and rows. So what's important is when you get to the very bottom and you see unrestricted fund balance, and you see those in parens and you see those are negatives. Those are bad in budgeting and accounting revenues and expenditures. In the line right below that, lines 49, you can see what is called the structural deficit. And what it's saying is inflows versus outflows have a difference in the $7.5 to $8 million range. So you wonder, why is that? Well, we took action to cause this. This was an affirmative action by this body and the council to deal with this, with an issue. And it relates to the interaction of budget reductions and how the IMF helped the Trotcourt Trust Fund, and a decision to, as the IMF was getting in trouble, sort of allowing the IMF to become stable. So there was, as part of budget reductions, general fund taken out of the Trotcourt Trust Fund, and that would have resulted in allocation reductions to all the Trotcourts. One of the solutions several years ago was to take $20 million from the IMF, the Improvement and Modernization Fund, and transfer that into the Trotcourt Trust Fund as a backfill to the general fund reduction, which kept us from having to allocate $20 million of reductions. But as many of you are aware, going through the years with the IMF, we've had to substantially reduce the expenditures out of the IMF because revenues have been declining in the IMF. 50-50 sharing of the 2% automation revenues have just been declining substantially. There used to be a high point of $76 million coming in. Now we're down in the 20s. And so there's been a lot of action taken to solve this IMF problem. One of the biggest solutions was to allow the IMF to retain that revenue that was transferring to the Trotcourt Trust Fund. So this is a matter of shuffling the dollars between branch funds to try and minimize the reductions on the Trotcourts while preserving key programs out of the IMF. So when the decision was made to retain the $20 million in the IMF, there was a secondary action to try and consolidate the kinds of expenditures that occur out of the IMF, because we had IT expenditures, as it was the primary issue, in two different funds. We had some in the IMF, we had some in the IMF. So while we held on to $20 million of expenditures, We moved about $7 million of expenditures from the TCTF along with the revenue in the IMF. So we started knowing that we'd have about a $13 million problem because we took some expenditures and some revenue, so we left the net negative over about $13 million in the TCTF. But that was going to be a few years out because we had fund balance in the Trafford Trust Fund. Just want to make sure we're tracking if you have any questions about where we're at. So what was the solution to try and save the IMF? But obviously that causes a problem in the TCTF. But over the years, we've looked at other expenditures in the TCTF to try and reduce them. For example, we've reduced the, based on expenditures, the jury allocations. It was one solution. We've had compensation for judges' pay. Since we've had salary savings, we've been able to reduce and refine that level down. So we've also reduced further expenditures in certain line items in the TCTF. But ultimately, we've gotten down to a point where we think we've reduced expenditures as much as we can at this point and see that there's this structural problem in the out years. We feel like we have enough unrestricted fund balance to cover us for the balance of this year, next year, and even an amount in 18-19. But we don't want folks to think that somehow there isn't going to be an eventual problem. So there's two ways to deal with that. One is that we return to the budget process with the administration and legislature and submit a budget change proposal for this. And as part of the budget change proposals that were discussed by this body, I don't know if it's a couple of months ago now, in which we identified a number of structural issues, in light of this issue, hopefully they're not upset at me, but I took the liberty of adding this particular structural problem to that multi-part DCP, because if our interest is in finding structural budget reform for the Trafford Trust Fund and therefore for the trust, this was also a worthy and necessary issue for the administration and legislature to consider. So that hopefully is then the goal, which would be to get this funded and this gap funded so we don't have reductions to the Trafford operations. Because if we don't get this backfill from the administration and legislature, then we would have to allocate about an $8 million reduction to Trafford's in a couple of years. So we're having this conversation because on the one hand, we're going to talk about spending IMF. There's going to be another meeting to talk about allocations from the Trafford Trust portrayed above in the fund condition statement. But we don't want you to think that we're spending without acknowledgement that there is an issue in the out years. And so that's important, I think, for us. And that's why they asked us to present this issue as awareness, a plan, so that it's not just a problem, and that as part of our advocacy, setting up a sort of a fix to the structural budget for the Trafford, that this kind of issue is a key part of that discussion.
Thank you, Lockwell. General and I thought it was really important when we're looking at our accounts that we not look at them in isolation because it's like having a savings and a checking account. You need to know your financial health in both accounts, and so we wanted you to be aware that we are deficit spending in our Trafford Trust Fund. And in fact, if you look at line six, the filing fee revenue, did I hear you correctly a few meetings ago that our filing fee revenue is even going down a little farther than what we had projected or not?
It is from the most recent. I just heard 2 days ago from Suzanne about the presentation, or from Donna Newman, who does the revenues, that civil is kind of
flat
and possibly has a slight uptick from the most recent data. But remember that revenue, the civil filing fees, which go as part of our base allocations, is
right.
What's subject to backfill from the administration.
Okay, so we don't need to worry about that.
Right.
Okay.
So the revenues that are part of our base allocations are subject to the revenue backfill from the administration. It's things like the civil assessments that are not.
Excellent. Okay. So I think that was the reason that we thought it was important. There's a lot going to start with that. There's no action item there, but there is an action item on it.
So now that you're all consistent with the agenda, now we're moving back to what is now item one on the possible action item, and it is designated as an action item for our purposes today. And therefore, we have Judge Earl and Cherry to move forward with Blackwood's discussion.
Thank you. So in terms of the IMF, it's not as painful as it has been in years past. And what I'm going to do, and this is a little bit different, Donna, that we had talked about, is I think we have, is Donna Newman on the phone?
She's on vacation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll be
here. Oh, thank you. Natalie, right? I'm sorry. I thought maybe, Natalie, if we could start by walking us through the flood condition statement.
If you ever come to the table, so everybody can hear on the microphone.
So I'll have Natalie walk us through the fund condition statement, and then we'll kind of summarize the recommendations that are being brought to the body today, which are laid out between pages 7 and 9, are the recommendations and attachments that follow behind that. So Natalie, whenever you are ready.
All right, let me set up.
I believe the fund condition statement can be found as attachment A on page 10.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Natalie Daniel, and I'm the supervisor in the Budget Services Unit. I'll be presenting an overview of the fund condition statement for the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund, or IMF. As Judge Earl mentioned, this is attachment A in your handout. Specifically on that document, I would like to draw your attention to column D, or fiscal year 17-18. As you can see in cell D17, we are projecting total revenues and transfers into the fund to be approximately $74.1 million. Total 17-18 proposed allocations, which I'll also go over in a few minutes, are represented in cells D20 through D26, and total approximately $73.6 million. At year end, we expect the fund to have a balance of just over $6.2 million based on these revenue projections and the proposed 17-18 allocation recommendations. The fund, therefore, has a positive fund balance and remains solvent in the future. I would also like to take this opportunity to draw your attention to one cell in fiscal year 16-17. And that's cell C30. This $2.2 million figure is a combination of operational savings and items that have recently been identified to be disencumbered in the current fiscal year. Are there any questions on the fund condition statement?
Thank you, Natalie. So the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee met by conference call and discussed the health of the IMF and are making specific recommendations that begin on page 7 of your materials. The first one is that, of course, this is all contingent upon the Budget Act, and if it turns out differently than we anticipated or was predicted in January, then we would have to regroup. But staff broke the recommendations down. Number 2 is all programs except legal service office and IT, which they address separately. So in recommendation number 2, it deals with the Center for Procedure and with the IT element of the Phoenix program. In recommendation number 3, it deals with the legal services office. And in recommendation number 4, it deals with IT. And you will see that the increase really is in the legal service office for reasons stated in the materials. All of the other recommendations are decrease or a net zero increase. And I didn't know, Natalie, if you wanted to go through those separately.
Sure. So the 17-18 proposed IMF allocations, as were mentioned, are in attachment B. Specifically, the R&E subcommittee recommended allocations on March 20th, totaling approximately $73.4 million. As listed in column G. These allocations result in a net adjustment of negative $3.889 million from 16-17 total and impact allocations from 4 offices. The branch accounting and procurement office has a net change of approximately negative $46,000. The Center for Judicial Education and Research has a net change of $0. The Information Technology Office has a net change of approximately negative $3.9 million, and the Legal Services Office has a net change of approximately $85,000. Approval of the R&E recommendation would allow the request to move forward to the Judicial Council meeting that's scheduled for for May 18th and 19th, and would thus provide offices with their updated allocations before the beginning of the fiscal year. We have staff present from the IT and legal services offices to answer any questions that you have about their allocations.
Does anyone have any questions for the IT staff or legal service staff who are available to answer questions?
I want to add something, if I may. Just to, so on attachment B, you'll see a couple of large items in IT. One of them is line 23, the case management D3 replacement. That reflects the BCP funding. So this is something that we get general fund for, and so any of the changes related there are not because they've taken money away, but because of the anticipated plan of expenditures of that almost $25 million over 3 years. So it's a good thing, and we're still working hard with the courts to do that. And it also reflects on line 31 an anticipated approval of the $4.1 million that was proposed in the governor's budget for the sustained justice edition BCP. That was heard in the Senate. There was no action taken. Some commentary by the LAO, and I think responses provided by us showed that it supported the proposal and the legislature's continued support. It's going to be before the Assembly on Monday, and we'll have, I think, good responses from Rob O'Young from the committee to make sure that we secure these funds, critical funds, but they are anticipated in here as a part of the budget. Obviously, to the extent that there's, and I would say they're globally, that if there's some catastrophic change in the budget and these situations change dramatically, that we would then be revisiting all of the expenditures here. But this is an effort to assume that there's, at least the IMF has held and has proposed that this is the expenditure plan that we would like to take forward for 17-18. Sherry.
I just want to express some concern with our approach on CCCOR. It was the recommendation of the that it be approved, but I do want to express my concern. I'm very conservative when it comes to financing, and so it won't surprise you that I'm going to say this yet again. I am really, really pleased to see how hard the IT folks at Judicial Council has worked. They've worked at reducing their costs. I think they've done a great idea. And personally, I'm a big supporter of the CCPOR program. In fact, when I was the CEO in Riverside, I was one of the first pilots because I think it is an excellent program. My concern is that we do not have a funding stream to offer CCPOR to all 58 counties at this point. We're bringing up Orange County and Sacramento County. I think that I hope IT is on the phone. I don't recall what number that brings us up to. The number of counties with Orange and Sacramento would be how many?
Were you able to hear that question?
20-something. I don't know.
Do we have Rob on the line?
No, Rob.
I thought we were at 28.
Okay, so maybe 30.
Virginia, if you have that information, please provide it.
What's the number?
We have 43 now. This is David Kuhn. So we have 43 counties on CCPOR currently. Adding Orange County and Sacramento obviously would take that up to 45. And then we do have 8 other counties that are going to be going on that are funded through a grant from the DOJ. So that would take it up to 53.
Okay. So the additional ongoing cost for Orange and Sacramento from the IMF would be $40,000 a year. That's ongoing cost.
That's correct.
The 8 that will be coming up through grant funding are smaller courts, so the amount is insignificant, like $5,000, $6,000 for ongoing. The problem is, maybe 5 courts that have not yet been gone on, and that we do not have a funding stream for, would be Alameda, Contra Costa, San Bernardino, San Diego, and LA. That's 50% of the state. It's a big chunk. We don't have funds identified for implementation, for SANS costs, for ongoing costs, including SANS. So, you know, I'm expressing my concern because I just think we've been criticized before for not having funding streams for programs. And it just, I wonder if it's a better approach for us to identify a funding stream to be committed to a program before we continue to expand. That being said, it is a very valuable program, and if we continue to implement with these two counties and with the additional eight under grant funding, and then knowing that we have this big behemoth at the end of five major-sized counties to make it work for the state of California, we just have to be committed that we'll do it rather than find excuses to bring everyone up to the same program that, you know, we should not be penalized because of our size. So that's all. I just wanted to express my concern, I'll leave it to you if it needs to be discussed.
Yeah, I'll say is that as part of the funding requests that are being considered by the Judicial Branch Budget Committee, that a funding request is in process that would be anticipated to be part of the BCP submitted to the Department of Finance to complete
that
the remaining.
Right.
So the funding plan is pursue a budget change proposal to...
would include the big five again.
Yes.
The big five, like.
I don't know. I think at this point that's part of the process is them flushing out the dollars. I know I've heard some multi-million dollar numbers, so they're not. It's not something that's just a couple of nickels in the pouch.
Oh, I would not expect, because
it is. It's big. The big fight at the end. And it's not just the implementation cost. It's the ongoing
right.
cost that would come from the IMF. So that's why I thought it was important to raise it.
Judge Earl?
Just a point of clarification, Sherry. Are you then opposed to... allocating this level to expand to Orange County and Sacramento until you funding sources for the other five courts are identified, or are you in favor of this but you've expressed a concern?
I believe as a branch that before we expand programs, we should have an identified funding stream for the program. I believe it's problematic to continue to expand in pieces until we have that identified. Everyone voted but one at the R&E committee for this, and so that was me. So I just, you know, I wanted to express my concern here because it seems like it would be a better methodology for the branch to have a secure funding stream. We have money to do this now. It's been built into their ongoing money. Apparently, we've got money for the next eight. I just want us to be aware that the big five at the end need the same support in the future that we're showing this group today if we make this commitment to continue with this two and then the additional eight. We can't turn our backs on the last five just because of their size.
So would you support, as stated, with perhaps a clarification that it also be supported as other courts then come in? I mean, I understand your concern is a valid one, but those courts that are identified right now are funded, including
they
Sacramento.
Have their funding identified that is available.
Right.
Yes. You know, I don't know what the future is going to bring, Judge Conklin. I may vote against LA even getting it in the future if the IMF funding is.
Your APJ is sitting right next to you, just so.
Yeah, but, you know, if we don't have money in IMF, I may be voting against LA coming on. So anyway, I just wanted to express my concern because I think it's important that we start thinking more strategic when we are implementing programs that we have a plan in place.
David, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to obviously recognize the comments that Sherry had made, because it was a very in-depth discussion and a concern about making sure that we have resources available to sustain specific programs. I disagree with the position that if it's being made that we not fund these programs, because there's a lot of stuff that we've identified as priorities, and safety is one of them. This is something that very much aligns with that. The decision was made early on to fund this particular program. It has yielded enormous benefits for those courts that are participating. We're not going to be able to do everything that some courts receive and other courts are waiting for, but that doesn't set aside the importance of remaining committed to supporting financially some of the programs. And Orange is going to be a recipient of the program, but I do believe that we should endeavor to try to provide this service for all of the courts. It is in our best interest. It is in the best interest of the people that we serve. If this thing goes forward, I would also say that we should also make this commitment to try to find funding to bring everybody on board, because courts being excluded from this program puts everybody at a disadvantage. So
So I'm going to agree with both David and Sherry, if that's possible. So I think it is a program we have to move forward with, to David's point. It's one that we have all committed to. It has great benefits. The part about Sherry's comment that I agree with is that there have been great strides made in the IMF to take it from what was a severe deficit to not having a deficit. Now, part of that was the revenue transfer, certainly. But the other was making an effort to have the IMF focus on improvement and modernization rather than pay for ongoing operational expenses. So implementation costs make sense, getting projects up and running makes sense, but to have the IMF continue to fund ongoing expenses, we should be wary of, because that then means those monies aren't there to make those future improvements. So I agree with Sherry there. I think having the BCP, which is intended to go forward to pay for those ongoing costs, makes sense, but I certainly agree with David. This isn't one that we want to, while that is our principle, I don't think we would want to hold up the benefits that the system provides for those courts.
Colin.
You know, you're all right, but the question is, you basically have a system where we're filing restraining orders and trying to share it throughout the whole state, and not having half the state on board is like you have a program that doesn't work, because I don't really need LA's restraining orders personally, but Orange does, and everybody else, Ventura does. So not having half the state on the program is like you're not really having an effective program. So you've got to get everybody, either everybody gets on board or everybody, we just stop the program. I mean, it's not the way to do business.
Mike, Planet, did you have a comment?
No, I was just raising my hand saying we're next door to LA. You know, their data would be really critical or really useful for us.
So I didn't mean to get us off track.
No, it's fine. We got.
I think that we need to understand that with this, it's a commitment that we need to make sure we take care of the final five at the end.
Mr. Scope, did you have your hand up for you?
I was waving at Ted Girl.
Okay. I'm just trying to be as effective as she was in recognizing everybody. So. I feel like I'm looking at a jury. Any other comments? I think those are all very valid. So I'll turn it back to Judge Earl to clarify what motions, if any, are pending.
Does anyone have any questions about the specific recommendation? Is there anything more, Natalie, that you wanted to add? Anyone have questions for Natalie or staff?
I can't help myself. But go ahead, Jake, if you have something.
My only question is that when we get out to 1920, there is a decrease on line, attachment A, page 11 of the PDF, column and location, cell F20 shows a decline in that year of $6 million for that line. So is that reflecting our expectation of reduced costs at the CCTC?
It should be as the B3 courts were dropping off. That was the year in which we were supposed that the agreement was they had that glide path to come off. So that should be the savings that reflected there, but I'll defer to the IT staff because I know and our budget staff they work together on the multi-year planning and what savings have scored by fiscal year.
So yeah.
Zalaco. Hey Zalaco, it's Virginia. Okay, I have another meeting, but give me the line item you're looking at, please.
So page 11 of the PDF, which is attachment A.
Attachment A. Can it be printed in the table?
Yeah. Call or cell F20.
Oh, this looks at the 23. Yeah.
Yeah, 49.7 million.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you look down to lines 25 and 26, Jake, you'll see that B3 is 3.2 million of it. Same course, another close to a million, and then there's reduction in some of those other areas.
Yeah, those are the projections for the decommissioning from the CCTC.
We have Suzanne who also can.
Yes, the decrease in cost or the expenditures for that signal line. Is the ports coming off of the system. So when all the ports are off of IMF and have their own system, the cost to IT is also reduced, and that would be
comes up to the $6 million?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I know we moved about 7, and I know that they'd ratcheted some of the costs down over time. So.
Well, and the Nike also had additional savings that they were going to be incurring over time because they had to look at their potential expenditures, other things other than the case management and the TPC box. So there are other IT costs in there?
Right, so I asked that question only to reflect on that means that from where we had a, what was the deficit at one point in the IMF?
$18
million. So now we're looking at a projection where we would have a positive $8.3 million. So I just think,
right.
Taking a second to reflect on that's a lot of improvement,
yeah.
A lot of.
And outside of whatever.
Yeah, that's so good. So Judge Earl and Sherry, thank you.
There's also some assumptions built into those numbers, Jake, without going into a lot of detail that we're leasing things instead of buying, we're doing a lot of trade of things that we may not want to do when we have money.
And that the refresh that IT does is difficult. So that might be a low year for refresh. The next year, maybe higher, and we'll see a bump up.
Right.
So it's a constant, you know, IT is doing as best as they can to project what the refresh are for the telecom needs. That particular year is a low year of refresh.
Other questions or concerns?
So if it was a parade, somebody just rained on it, but that's fine.
Yeah.
We need the rain. We need reality, too.
I'm sorry.
But it means that we could possibly think about one-time investments for things that could improve and modernize the trial courts, which is a more positive view and management of the fund so that we could actually entertain self-funding some issues on a small scale to help chocolate operations. So there's a little positive sunshine.
On the parade.
I'll move my recommendation that we approve a 2017-2018 allocation of $73.457 million, as recommended by the committee.
Okay, so it's been moved that the recommendation be adopted. Thanks. I'm sorry.
So that would be option one, Mike?
Yes.
So that's so we're all, so you're looking at the bottom of, well, it depends on what you printed, but option one of the 73.457. Everybody clear on that? It's been moved and seconded. Any additional comments or questions about it before we take a vote? All in favor of that motion, aye?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No opposition. All right.
I will count on you in the future.
Take
your name.
I took note when you said that. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Moving along to item two on next action item is County of Monterey Children's Waiting Room action item, which is in your material. I want to make sure we all have the right page on it.
14,
thank you. Maybe 13, depending on what you printed out. Is Monterey on the phone? I wouldn't expect him to be.
He's
already.
Monterey Superior Court.
Okay, great.
So we have Suzanne will walk us through this.
Hello, I'm Suzanne Malhefe. I'm a senior budget analyst with the Budget Services Division of Judicial Council. For the children's waiting room policy, Monterey Superior Court is requesting that its CWR distribution be continued. The court initially expected to open its CWR in 2015-2016. However, CWR revenues have come in substantially lower than expected. The court is still building up the fund balance it needs to start for startup costs and ongoing operational expense. The Fiscal Planning Subcommittee at its March 30th meeting unanimously approved recommending that Monterey's request be recommended by TICFAC for approval by the Judicial Council at its May 2017. Are there any questions on this request, or does Monterey want to say anything? Mr. Simpson?
Monterey, any comment?
I will choose to answer questions only.
Magic, there doesn't appear to be. I'm sorry, Mr.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Do we know?
You know, I just got a headset today, and it must not be working. No, I will just defer to any questions.
We know when you, the question in the room was when you anticipate opening your room?
We anticipate opening it in summer of 2018. We have to go through some reviews with the county as well as the judicial council as it relates to approval of the location, as well as we're doing some review with other courts with similar resources as to how they would how we would fund the children's waiting room.
Any other questions or concerns on item two? Seeing none, is there a motion?
I move approval of
Mike,
request.
Mike Plante. Second by Ms. Romero Solis. Any other questions, concerns on this?
Next.
Pardon me? Okay, just a feedback. All right. The motion has been seconded. We moved and seconded. All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
You can't vote on your own motion, but that's okay. Sorry, Magic. All in favor, aye again. Any opposition?
No.
Motion passes. Monterey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's just for consistency purposes move now to San Joaquin. A similar request, child waiting room. Suzanne again.
All right. San Joaquin Superior Court is requesting its first children's waiting room distribution of $5 per first paper filing effective July 1st, 2017. The new Stockton Courthouse will be opening in early 2017-2018. And the court is anticipating opening the CWR in late 2017-2018. The Fiscal Planning Subcommittee at its March 30th meeting unanimously approved recommending that San Joaquin's request be recommended by TICFAC for approval by the Judicial Council at its May 2017 meeting. Do we have anyone from San Joaquin on the phone?
Yes, San Joaquin is here.
Are there any questions for the court or of me?
I have a question.
Judge Cope?
Why there was a no vote? Did you vote no?
On the last one, I did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Does
it
not relate to this one?
It does not relate.
All right, so I appreciate that. But let's clarify. So on the last motion, even though it passed, no vote. I need to clarify that for the minutes. Thank you. There was a no vote. Okay.
So, but it doesn't relate to this one, so I would have a question.
Okay. So any concerns on this motion? Is there a motion? Glenn Shamasaki, is there a second?
Second.
Oh. All right. Second by Judge Johnson. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and that was an aye on the phone. Earlier I misspoke. I think that was a member on the phone who was voting aye rather than the participating court. So we'll show the motion passes. All right, folks, we are well within our agenda, but I'm going to take a break now before this will not be our lunch break, but it's a logistical break because we're trying to line up the judge for the next item to see if we can move these things around. It's obviously going to put us well within our agenda time. We're going to come back within about 10 or 15 minutes once we get that logistic taken care of, have that item, then have lunch, and then have our open discussion if that's all that's left on the agenda. So we'll be in break for 15 minutes. Thanks for your patience.
Hello, it's Judge Rosenberg calling in. Hello.
Thank you, Judge. We are pulling everyone back together now. We appreciate you pulling away.
Sure. It's been a challenge getting through. I've had three or four different passcodes.
No, I'm sorry.
I made it. It's like cutting through the underbrush.
Gathering back, we are now
on. We're live.
We're live. We're being recorded. Thank you all very much, particularly Judge Rosenberg. Thank you so much. I apologize for interrupting your jury trial. Our agenda has changed slightly this morning, and you're enabling many of us to make trips out of town, hopefully before the 2 o'clock hour, to get back before what looks to be a storm maybe coming or going. So we truly appreciate your changing around for us. This gets us to item four on the agenda, folks, a recommendation of the Small Court Dependency Working Group methodology, and we will start off in honor of his time with Judge Rosenberg. Judge?
Thank you so much, Judge. I'll be very brief, and then I'm going to turn it over to Don Will, the principal staff member, and then we're both here to answer any questions you might have, although I do think the report in draft is fairly comprehensive. But let me just highlight the following. First of all, I'm sure you all know, courts are required to provide and pay for counsel for children and parents in juvenile dependency. We don't have a choice. It's a requirement under the law, and so every court has to pay for that. And that includes a lot of expenses, not just for counsel, but also for travel, experts, reports, you name it. The underlying problem that we have in California is the statewide need for juvenile dependency counsel is about $202 million. And the funds made available by the other branches total about $114 million. So there's just a shortfall. We don't have enough money to go around to do the required hiring of counsel. And the problem has been exacerbated for small courts because they have less money, they have smaller population, and they still have to provide the same infrastructure. Even if it's a small court with two judges, you still got to provide counsel, and typically you're talking about three counsel. So that's the challenge. We have defined, of our 58 courts, we've defined small courts as the 30 courts in California with the lowest child welfare caseloads. They all have caseloads of less than 400. In addition, we've defined what we call the smallest courts. Of those 30, 23 of them are very small, and they have caseloads of less than 200. The remaining 28 courts are the so-called larger courts. What we've done is create a scenario that provides no new money into the system. We are hoping the other branches will do so, but in the absence of any new money, we have recommended some formulas and a reallocation of money. Basically, we are shifting some money from the larger courts to the smallest and the small courts. And you can see that shift reflected in the two charts that are attached. The first chart shows the shifting in the year 2017-18, and the second chart shows the shifting in 18-19. I'm going to turn it over to Don to briefly go through the methodology that we came up with, primarily, frankly, based on recommendations from Los Angeles, which has been very generous in their approach here. Don, will you take us quickly through the scenario?
Thank you, Judge. Should note several members of
Beth Kaufman, Kevin Harrigan, Jerry Carter, Brian Taylor. I apologize if I meant anyone else. The working group had a number of meetings. They reviewed all
Judge Conklin, this is Judge Saunders. I'm having some trouble hearing Don.
Okay. I don't think there's a microphone.
I'll just talk louder.
Don, we're going to move a table to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Judge McCabe is always making himself.
No charge.
No charge, Judge.
Audiovisual expert in junior high.
Thank you. Is this better?
Yes, there is. Thank you.
So the working group reviewed all of the materials that had been research materials collected on dependency council funding and workload from the prior group that had looked at workload for all attorneys in the state, regardless of the size of the court. It did a survey of all small courts to which all 30 small courts responded and conducted follow-up interviews with CEOs and judges in the small courts. It conducted interviews with attorneys, and it reviewed data on caseloads, filings, and other metrics. I think Judge Rosenberg laid out the findings. They did agree, the working group, that small courts face unique costs. There's a lack of experienced attorneys in small courts that leads to a lack of negotiating leverage with that the court has to try to lower costs from the attorneys it has available. There are high costs incurred by the attorneys. Many attorneys service several small courts, which tend to be geographically remote, so there's a lot of extra travel time. The court and to the minors' placements, which minors' attorneys are required to visit. And small courts carry a proportionally higher cost for expert witnesses and for conflict counsel. A large, complex case in a small court can really blow the dependency budget for the year. So the committee's or the working group's recommendations are to continue the reallocation freeze for the 23 smallest courts that the council approved last year. I should note these are recommendations covering two fiscal years, not permanent changes to the methodology. Recommend that the council address the high cost overhead issues in small courts by adjusting the BLS index that the overall methodology uses to calculate the workload funding metric for dependency attorneys to, for all those small courts who have a BLS index of under one, to adjust it up to one. And then to offset the changes that these funding offset these funding changes by transferring funds from the other courts, generally larger courts that are receiving increases from the ongoing reallocation process. And then to continue the reserve that was established last year by the council to continue funding caseload spikes for small courts. The working group decided that was a different issue. The reserve seemed to be working, and the $100,000 reserve out of the $114.7 million should be continued. So, Judge Rosen.
So that's a quick tiptoe through our tulips. The working group was unanimous in its recommendation, and we certainly welcome any input or concerns or questions the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee might have, and we're open to questions.
All right, Mike Planet.
Yeah, Mike Planet here. So, Donna, maybe I missed it or I can't quite find it. How was the amount of the increase? How is that calculated? What is that based on, $1 million?
That came from two places. It was the increased flowed from continuing the suspension reallocation.
Let me just jump in here. The number that comes out was not an arbitrary number. That's the number that resulted from the substantive changes that we made. We didn't know what the number would be when we started the process, but that's the number that came out at the other end.
Yeah, it's not clear what the process was, that was taking the current budget and then factoring in continuing to suspend the decreases for small courts and adjusting the BLS indicator to 1 for the small courts who were under that. That's what led to the $1 million change.
You'll find that on page 36 of your packet.
My second question is the $100,000 included in this?
In that million?
$1.7071 million?
No, it's not. It's the line actually above that. It says reserve.
Gotcha.
That's a continuation of the reserve to handle any weird spikes that might occur for a small court. Are there any other questions?
Questions, concerns? Seems to be an example of those courts that are truly a short-term fix, and L.A. was one of those who came to the table on this, say, for the good of the branch as a whole, setting aside individual needs, let's solve this problem. And it appears to be a proposal to solve that problem. However, discussions, I'm sorry, Jake.
So, Don, Judge Rosenberg, I have a question on the spreadsheet. So we're on same sheet that Mike was talking about. So page 42 of the PDF, top 17-18 allocation on dependency council funding.
You're looking at the chart.
Yes. So column B, caseload funding model estimated funding need. And then column H says it's the net cost of the BLS adjustment up to 1 for all of those courts, correct?
Yes.
So would that column B not include the adjustment that's shown in column H?
Right, they're additive. H, column H, and so yes, we have the.
Okay.
So there's a final tweak in the methodology, Jake, so that if the addition from the recommendation drives the court over its caseload funding needs, then it's dropped to receive just the caseload funding need.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to sign off to get back to the jury. I'll leave you, Judge Conklin. I'm sorry I've got to dash out here, but I'm sure Don can answer any technical or other questions you may have. We appreciate your input on this. Thank you so much.
Again, Judge, thanks for taking the break for us. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I'm struggling with an underlying premise of how, not necessarily the intent or the logic behind it, but how it's been sort of computationally performed, I guess. So sure. I guess my concern is that if we agree that the group has looked at it and has said, well, the issue here is that my attorneys are coming from I've been picking on Lake lately, so I'll just continue to do that. So we're in Lake County, and the attorneys that are coming to Lake County, they live in Napa. And so the premise is by having that cost of living adjustment for Lake, which is about 0.75, they can't hire that attorney who's coming from Napa because that person has a Napa cost of living and expectation, right? So I think that is not something, as we talked about this yesterday as it related to Waltham, similar discussion. There are elements that are regionalization that we need to address, and I think that is something we didn't realize before and we need to look at on that side. But I think it's made, that argument is made here, I think, rather well. But if that's the assumption we're making, we say, yes, that's true, they should be at a minimum of 1 because they're competing for that resource, that should be calculated into whatever their need is. And I think it's not. What this is doing is it's doing it after the fact, and then you're saying, well, if that's greater than their need, they shouldn't get the money. But that is part of their need. So that should be part of that initial calculation. Does that make sense? Am I articulating that clearly enough?
It certainly makes sense. I think that, and I won't speak other members of the group will probably want to weigh in. I would say that the intent being that this is a short-term two-year fix, after which the funding need would remain, and everyone would return to that need computed for them, then it shouldn't be that piece. The working group didn't want to tinker with how that was put together.
So then I would offer an alternative here, which I realize the group didn't do, but that if we as this group believe that that argument has been made correctly, that part should not be temporary. That this has been studied, that's been looked at, that this cost of living issue, this competition issue is real, that's not going to go away in 2 years. So that change to a VLF minimum of one as it relates to dependency council would be a modification to the model, not restricted to 2 years. That would just be changing the need. And then, so that, as a revision, that would be,
So, Judge Conklin, I think this is really, is this an action item? I don't think it's an action item. So I would agree with what Jake's commenting on, and I would suggest to Dawn that as part of our work then, make a permanent solution that we do what Jake has indicated and start looking at that model. This was always seen, Jake, as a temporary fix while we continue to look at
And it wouldn't change the numbers for the next 2 years. It would only change after that. But so I understand what Jake is saying, but you're right. We have time to think about this. It's only a discussion item.
Right. If we can't do anything today because it's a discussion item, but I think it's been added to the workload.
Does that make sense?
In that it's only a discussion item.
Okay.
And I think
go ahead.
Part of the presentation, I think, from Don was showing accepting the model as it is and to show you the changes based on our recommendations. So it maybe could have been clear or built in, but it's just reflective of what changes were being made. So I agree.
Chris Coffin?
So let's not forget one other thing, is that this is based on the amount of money we're getting today and the fact that we're not getting enough money to solve this problem. So let's not forget that. We really need to be pushing to get more money. Because this is something we really need to be doing. And if we settle now and just say this is what we're going to do and forget about the bigger picture, we're just shooting ourselves in the foot. Our focus needs to be on let's get as much money as we can. Then we can fight and argue about how we spread it out.
All right. My recollection is when the council considered this the last time, it was bounced back to us to come up with something like this, to say, hold on a minute, send it back to TICBAC, let TICBAC come up with some recommendations to address this critical short term of this group of courts, and then allow us to take the time within that time period, if appropriate, as Judge Kaufman said, to advocate for more funds and to come up with the funding methodology. Judge Cope?
It could be the rain on the parade, but I'm concerned that this committee looked at the damage that's being caused by that chronic underfunding. Last time I looked at it, statewide, the dependency council was funded at about 74% of what the currently identified need is. Now, that's an important thing there, too, that the identified need jumped by, Don, what, $35 million with the recomputation using different assumptions?
$80
million. Yeah. Was it $80 million? That's right. It went from 130 to something. Anyway, a lot. It jumped by a lot. And so this recommendation is looking at the currently identified need. If somebody's getting 100% of the currently identified need, they are much better funded than any other court, because there are still a lot of courts that are funded more in the area of, what, 60%. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so when this subcommittee talked to those,
how do you get to the point where
30 courts are the small courts, the smallest courts, leaving the minority of the courts as the larger courts? I think it's important to remember that this damage is not only caused to the small courts. When our subcommittee was looking at the overall funding of court-appointed dependency council, we heard from some of the smaller courts. We also heard a lot from the larger courts, L.A. and San Diego, from the attorneys in those larger courts, and the damage that's being caused to them by this underfunding. So this addresses the pain to the smaller courts, but
if there's a cost, that $1.1 and then $1.2 million comes from somewhere. It's not being paid by the legislature or the administration. And I don't think and I also am concerned that the recommendation, when we get to it, I guess it's not on the agenda today, but the recommendation calls for that $1.1 and then $1.2 million to come out of the potential increases for the courts that were getting increases. Well, the reason they're getting increases is because they're the most severely underfunded. And so we'll continue to take from the efforts to bring them up to a level of parity in funding in order to fund the smaller courts. So I just, my point is just, I see another side to the story. I feel the pain that the small courts feel. I understand the pain that small courts feel, but I think there's another side that isn't being considered in this recommendation.
What I would say is that for some of the small courts, they wouldn't even have defense counsel at all. I mean, you have to have three or four in. They have to travel. There's just a lot of things that are different. And I also think, and I know it may not need to come from this committee, but we really should be talking about it to some extent, that whether the cost is really should be borne by the judicial branch at all, because those children who are appearing on our courts are citizens of our county, and while, again, the monies aren't, I think that traditionally it came from here because it needed to happen, but I think that it is, again, a way that other branches can say, well, you guys take care of it while we underfund it, so they don't get to see the problem. And the other thing that makes it hard to talk about the Tennessee Council in general is that there's this disparate amount that people are getting compensated for what they get. And we aren't looking into that, and I'm not saying that we should do that, or maybe we should, but that I think it gets bogged down in the legislature, because part of it is that, I would say, arguably, they aren't getting paid comparable to the county councils appearing in our senior department or other attorneys, DAs, and public defenders in other offices. And so the ask is always, we need this, and then the attorneys, rightfully so, and decide we need more money. And I think that, again, becomes this convoluted ask to the legislature that then when it becomes convoluted, it's easy for them to say, see, we don't have 58 counties on the same page, so we're going to do nothing. And so I really do think that there should be professions in that area that are comparable to DAs and public defenders that appear in our court. It should be set, that price should be set regionally in some way. They should have opportunity for growth. We can't develop that, or we don't have a system to develop that in the judicial branch, but I think really, the law says we do it, so we'll do the best we can, but I think we really need to keep saying that, however, because the hard part for me in a small county is when Tennessee attorneys say, we deserve more money, I'll say yes, but then I have to look around my courtroom and say, who am I going to lay off in my courtroom? What service am I not going to provide to the public in looking at what we have to do with that? And that really is what I think is a somewhat conflicted issue that we should try to get out of. Again, it's something that we started doing out of need, and I think we did a really good job at it, but I don't think that we want to be something that we do, because the ask for raises in salary gets convoluted with the need, and we haven't even compared. I mean, I would predict that what our council get paid in Humboldt County is a lot less than more populated counties, just how things go. And I don't want to get us convoluted in that, but I think that the 30 counties that are talked about here won't have council, and they just won't. They won't come to our counties to do their work. They won't invest in those things. And they won't exist. And again, the problem becomes when some court gets more, another court gets less, keeps us in this, as someone said before, in this circular firing squad, so that we can't progress forward in any way. And that's, I think, regretful.
So let me just clarify, and obviously encourage other comments and questions, the procedure, because I want to make sure there's no confusion. This isn't an action item for us, because this will not be an action item for us. So procedurally, what happened was, and I'm just noting here, the working group's charge was to report to E&P. E&P then presents the recommendations back to TICBAC for input. But the working group itself
then presents to the council. So TICFAC can have input, but this is not an action item for TICFAC. So this is not the type of thing where then TICFAC reports to the council on this. We have input on the recommendations, which is exactly what's happening now, and I think is very good input. But that's how it goes forward procedurally. Sam?
What is the time frame, and is there any other open meeting proportion to it between now and the presentation?
This goes to the council in May.
Okay.
Judge Kaufman?
Let me explain to you why we did what we did on this committee, and I have to use my court as an example. Sometimes primaries are nice. Sometimes the studies are nice. Sometimes we try to figure out allocation based on, you know, cases, quantities, et cetera, like that. But sometimes need is also more important. And I'll give you an example in my court. Last year, we got $154,000 for defense. We were supposed to go back, based on the original study, we're going to go down to 70. So there's $80,000. We're at the floor. If we lost $80,000 and we still had to appoint counsel, $80,000 represents two clerks on my staff. Clerks we have? 10. So it was 20% of my workforce who were funding. If we lose two clerks, we close. Or if it's 10:58 and if I get that money goes away, we're in trouble. We can't make it. So this is not about, hey, we're not going to close a courtroom or we're not going to be able to do this. This is about courts folding because they can't fund appropriate and necessary needs. So the group basically realized that sometimes you have to throw these formulas out the window and you have to find the basic need. And so that's the reason for the recommendation. So if you want to go back to the old formula, you're going to see about 10 courts and 80 more be in deep trouble. So this is just a temporary solution. And I go back to my original statement. The real solution is not this. The real solution is getting more money from the state to fund these needs, or as Judge Hendricks saying, is give it to the county and say, it's your problem, leave us alone. It's not something we should be doing. But right now, this is not about a formula. This is about critical services and courts not being able to function because of $80,000 or $50,000 or whatever the number becomes.
I'm just stating the obvious. It's 2 years, which is going to be over tomorrow. I mean, that's going to be a very quick time period within which to try to...
And it should change. I don't disagree with that. We have to study it. But right now, what we're talking about is keeping the status quo until we can figure out what to do.
Other comments, questions? Again, this is a discussion item for input. I think it's been good input. I think staff has, therefore, a report to prepare as far as input from this committee. Jay?
I don't want to stick on this too long, but I guess, Judge, with your comments that you just made, I don't know how to say this anyway, but bluntly, I don't think the report says that. I don't think what you just said is what is written in the report. So what's written in the report says we looked at this issue. The only thing that we saw that was different for smaller courts is that we should address the BLS factor, that the workload is the same, let's leave it alone, and that we'll just pause it for 2 years and do nothing. So I hear what you're saying, and I'm not having any comment about that. I don't think that's what the report says.
So, Jake, I think part of the issue that we did not have time to look at, and I do support this. I mean, I think this is a good way to give us an opportunity to look at it, is should there be a pot of money that they can go and get? The concern doing it that way is they need to get it quickly. What if the pot of money runs out? I mean, there's a whole bunch of issues. So this is really just to give us time to look at how do we address some of the issues that they have in smaller courts that we don't have? It's right that the workload is the same, and a lot of the things in the report are accurate, but are there other ways that may be better than to put it in a restricted account that they may or may not use for the restricted purpose? And so this is a way to give us time to look at it, because we did talk about having a reserve account that they could go and apply for, but there's a lot of concerns with that, too. So I think that it was there were a lot of meetings. There had to be seven, and we looked at a lot of scenarios. This may be fresh to many of you, but there was a lot of meetings, a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of discussions, a lot of different ways looking at the issues, and this was seen as a good way to try to give us time to look at those more deeply.
And this goes ultimately, our role, in case any of you are wondering, is the joint subcommittee. This is a working group of the joint subcommittee. The joint subcommittee will ultimately make a recommendation that we will have input on. It'll come back, go to the joint subcommittee after all this, and then come back to us for our input to that joint subcommittee, which members of this are on that joint subcommittee. Any other comments? Again, as far as discussion on this for purposes of a report back to the working group from Kickback's discussion. Except to thank, obviously, the working group for the work they've done for us and for everybody. So with that, the good news is lunch is here. And so what I propose is we've worked through the stated agenda, except as noted at the beginning, there is now time allotted. We had about a half an hour allotted for an open discussion of items of general concern. I remind the members that's a discussion for members of TICBAC, and it's not an action item. We can't make it an action item. It's just general discussion. So what I would propose is that it's a quarter to 12. We take about a half an hour to grab food, come back, chat. About 12:15, we'll come back in, begin that open discussion. And with that open discussion, we'll conclude.
Do you want to do that, or?
There's no longer discussion. Any alternatives?
David, do you have a...
Okay, great. So everybody grab your food. It's here. If you can do your best, at 12:15, we'll start talking. If we're done in 15 minutes, we're done. If it goes till 2, it goes till 2. Appreciate it, everybody. Thank you. just to clarify the agenda, we have completed those items on our agenda that were described as action items and discussion items. However, we haven't come together due to weather and other contingencies as a group for a while, and I wanted to give us a chance to engage, recognizing this is an open discussion and we're recorded, to engage in items of general concern that folks may have. There's nothing we can do today beyond that discussion. So I'm as a judge, I'm sure this shocks you, but I try to follow procedure, and procedure says we can't take action on things today. We can't make motions in this arena at this point. Those are obviously ways that items can be agendized, but I surely want people to be able to talk about anything they're concerned about. If there's nothing to chat about, you're on the road. If there's things to chat about, any or all of you are welcome to participate in that till 2 o'clock. Some courts, Sherry Carter and had to leave. Judge Earl had to leave. So there were courts that said, you know what, we're on our way, and any of you are welcome to stay or to go. So in that interest, I will just comment. I want to share, and I invite Rebecca as well to share. She's looking at me like, really? And those of you that are in the room that were in our meeting yesterday from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, that I remind you is the subcommittee of this committee that is tasked with addressing WAFL and tasked with addressing how it is processing, how it may better process, and how long it should process, I guess is maybe the best way to phrase it. I would like to clarify, not as the chair of this, but as the subcommittee with Rebecca, and let her to continue to mention this as well. A comment during public comment this morning, it was stated, and I tried to be as accurate as I can, that year five, the proposal was that that this be paused, WAFM be paused, to allow for study before year six. That study is existing and ongoing, and that's what FMS is for. We met yesterday. We are developing a work plan within stated timelines from the council to do exactly that. The way somebody talked to me about it within the past few weeks was, we're looking under the hood, and we're deciding how is the engine running? Does it need a tune-up, or does it need to be rebuilt, or does it need to be, are there alternatives? So I talked to Judge Earl, even though she's left, I wanted to make sure, because I wasn't on the ground when WAFM was ultimately instituted. I wanted to make sure I stated it correctly, but that was, she reaffirmed my perception that yes, that in the fifth year, the upcoming year of WAFM, in that time we will be chatting about and doing work to it that is considered necessary. We're not waiting until the end of the fifth year before we drill down on it. So, items of concern, more than happy. Rebecca, did you want to add anything to that about how we're going to?
I think you said it perfectly.
Well, as a point of clarification, the council asked WAFM for implementation over the 5 years. It's already passed. So, what they're asking is that this committee vote to recommend that the council reconsider the fifth year implementation and stay it. So, I think that's what they're doing. Let's be concise. But they've already crossed that bridge. They've already decided 5 years, and they've already one of their considerations was that we'd go 50%. If I recall correctly, it was Beth Freeland that came up with that idea in our group with the three-leg approach, and the five-year was one of them, given that there's going to be severe impacts on courts and that the legislature and governor have to do their part in bringing up the other 50% through new money. And if you alter that scheme, then what you're going to do is you're going to increase the pain to these courts, particularly these donor courts, and the numbers are horrific. If you haven't seen them, look at those charts again. I remember looking at San Diego's and Santa Clara's and Alameda's and Orange's. They were stunning. If you proceed to implement it without waiting for the new money, and I think we're at 74%, somewhere like that. So they're getting there, but it didn't happen in the time frame that we thought, and that was known at the time that that could be a result, that the legislature and the governor don't have the funds or don't make it a priority to fund as much as we would have liked. And, of course, we're like everybody else. We never get enough and we always want more. I get that. So there's two sides to every story. I understand that. And I understand there's still discussion about, right now we have one camp talking about staying the fifth year. We have other camps that were previously talking about going beyond the 5 year and then continuing with the implementation to 100%, whether the new monies are there or not, versus allowing the original formula that the council adopted, which is 5 year implementation, and then and only then allow the new monies to make up the revenue. So there's competing interests. I get that. There's grave harm, and not to slight our brethren from Riverside. I know they've gut punched and kicked and thrown to the curb, and they are feeling it, and the numbers are horrific from them as well. They're in that camp. So once we have this conversation, I don't know how you go about this, but it really can't be an end result oriented analysis. These have to be long-term solutions with hopefully some mitigating factors to get over the bump, and that's what we're attempting to do, and I think that's what we're trying to do with dependency on a short-term basis. And so I look forward to those conversations once we delve into that area.
I appreciate the way you phrased that, especially the recognizing that WAFM was intended from the beginning, as approved by the council, to be the initial five-year period is what was approved. And so that is in place. FMS, as they look at it, will then analyze beyond that 5 years. What do we do beyond that 5 years? Did Mark, Judge Cope, would you have your hand up?
Yeah, I'm just not sure I understand. I've gone back and read the report for the council a couple of times and parts, but I still don't understand. But I'm not sure I understand it. Is that the what the council adopted was that after 5 years we'd stop, and that we would maintain inequity until the legislature and the administration made up for that balance. I don't understand it as being that, and so that might be a conversation that has to be had as we go on. It also didn't say in the report that if 5 years, then we'll start with year six and go to until we finish. I agree. It didn't say that either. Why is it? Am I missing something?
No. You're right.
Yeah. It just left it as an open question for exactly what Judge Conklin said, that then we decide where to go from there. Didn't say we would stop. Didn't say we would go forward. Said we would decide.
And Judge McCain, you were in those WAFM meetings.
I was on WAFM and I was on council when this was addressed.
Yeah,
I'm pretty aware of what was intended, but I will agree with Judge Koch that there were a number of issues that were silent when it was presented and voted on. And so the collective may not have had the same understanding, and that's why I agree. We should have those discussions, and quite frankly, should never be afraid to have those discussions. And so that's why I say I welcome.
And that's always the problem with legislative intent. One legislature's and legislators' intent may be different than another. So, sorry.
That was okay. Judge Coffin?
I think I was on the council when we approved it. But the question I have now is this. Just so I understand the procedure, is that if we agree that now we're going to examine law after 4 years so that we get to the fifth year and then at that point we know what to do, who exactly is going to examine? That's what people are asking. Is it
Rebecca
Fleming?
FMS. I'm co-chair with her, so it's the funding methodology subcommittee that now, and one of the things we did yesterday was to clarify that schedule.
Okay.
And there's a report that clarifies exactly how that will proceed, not substantively. In other words, not what we will address. We're still working on that. But procedurally, how that happens. Rebecca, do you want to clarify any of that?
Yes, a couple questions. That needs to be distributed so people know what's going on.
And we intend to do that. Absolutely.
Two is that once you make your decision, that comes to this group?
Yes. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee is a subcommittee of TICBAC.
Okay. And then this group would spend enough time to go over that report and then make a recommendation to the council?
Yes, Rebecca.
Right. And so the work plan itself,
of the items that we are charged with having a conversation about, the adjustment on time and anything that's one, you know, that we decided to add to that plan will come to this group. And actually, we did some work on that yesterday. We'll be having a conference call just to, you know, have some action items to put that forward to this group. But then the next, I actually anticipate the next in-person group to start the conversations about what we're kind of calling year six and beyond, you know, for that, the start of that conversation or the revisit of that conversation, as we did have an initial recommendation and we pulled it back at the request of this committee. And so we'll have that conversation again, and then the new recommendation or the consistent recommendation or the changed recommendation, however it comes out of, will come back to this committee for either pushing forward to the council or taking another look.
And I'll remind you, and I think it was most of this membership, we had a very spirited discussion a while ago about the recommendation to the council beyond year five. There was a vote, there was a decision, though clearly not a majority. I went to the council with that, and it was tabled. And looking back on it, I think that was appropriate, because that's giving us a chance to pause. But we have crossed this bridge. We then went back on the other side of the bridge to figure out how to cross it again. But I'm going to go first to Mike Roddy and then to Judge Cope.
It seems to me we have a more immediate, short-term issue that has to be resolved, and that is Alameda's proposal, request, recommendation, whatever it is, to pause at year four and reevaluate. And I only say that I think it's an immediate short-term problem is because they've made their pitch. They've been apparently frustrated that no one has listened to them up to this point. So if I'm Alameda, my next question is, well, where does it go from here? What happens? And we've talked repeatedly about we have a five-year plan in place. That's what the council agreed to. And I guess that leaves unresolved for them and others who might support their position. What happens now that this is on the table? Whose responsibility is it to say yay or nay?
So to be as direct as I can, it's not on the table yet. And I'm just trying to be as direct as I can. It was a public comment.
Puts it on the table.
That's where I want to get to. So it was a public comment. I'm not saying we should ignore the public comment, but procedurally, it's not on the table. So that's now where FMS is now aware of the public comment. We also have a very important public comment from small courts about what to address. And my interpretation of the small courts public comment was looking at going forward after year five. And that's, to answer your question directly, and I'll let Rebecca chime in on this as well, now it's coming to FMS, and our next meeting will be to develop the work plan based upon the public comments we've heard. Rebecca, do you want to, is that accurate?
Yes, but I think Mike's point is there. I think Alameda is in what they would probably coin an emergency state. So how do we address their needs?
Well, they brought up two things today. One was they're proposing that we somehow immediately stop and change what the council has already approved for the five-year rollout of Waltham.
Or
that's the next point. They brought up, what about the emergency fund? That is a request they can make. That's not for us to weigh in on yet. They should actually. I want to be careful. I'm not opining as to whether or not it's a valid request or it should be supported or should not be, or whether or not there's modifications to be made. But if they want to make the request of the $10 million fund, there are procedures that they need to follow to do that.
And not to get caught up in the technicalities, but my suggestion is that you contact them and suggest to them that so that this doesn't get lost in the translation. It's very clear what they want to do, what they're asking for, and that they need to do that in a formalized way in which you just please.
For the $10 million fund?
So that way there's no hard feelings about, well, you knew what we wanted to sandbag this. Why didn't you do this before? And tell us. I would just suggest that so it gets going.
Okay. I think that's more than appropriate. So I'm going to reach out to Judge Jacobson as chair of this committee, not to take a position, but to let him know that this committee is simply, in response to his public comment, clarifying that there are procedures to ask for, to an ask from the $10 million fund. I don't want him to be confused that this committee can do anything in that regard. It's up to him, and he needs to do that.
and take action on that. I think next was Judge Cope. No? Then
I was going to correct on you and said that it didn't get a majority, that 10-10-10.
It did get a majority, but it was a close call.
It was not unanimous.
It was not unanimous. That's why I should have said it. You're right. Mike Planet?
I'll defer to Dave. My comment has to have to do with the current.
So I think there are two issues. The first one relates to the deficiency funding request. I believe there is a schedule that obligates the requesting court to submit a request by a certain time of the fiscal year, which I believe is passed.
Right, for it to be an augmentation to
the subsequent year.
Otherwise, it's a cash advance, and then their shortfall is requested the next year, and it can either be funded or not.
So that may or may not afford them an opportunity to obtain a revenue.
For the record, their financial staff did contact our folks some time ago about the form. So they did. They were provided that by our staff.
That would go with the council? That would go with the council.
Yes.
It's not this group. That's what I'm trying to say.
There's the branch budget committee and then the council.
Right. So it's that procedure has been in existence and well known with deadlines for quite a while.
So the second piece then is, then that brings up the issue of what they're asking for right now, and that is to seek relief, given their fiscal situation, by having the WAFM recalculation suspend this year. So I think there are two issues that they probably are going to have to consider, which means, seemingly, if they want an answer or there's a response to their request to be given so they can prepare for next year, that may be something that we actually have to discuss in the short term, because their fiscal year, like everybody else, starts on July 1. So that may be something that would have to be expedited for consideration. First of all, agendized so that we fully understand what it is that we have to discuss, and make a decision or recommendation thereafter.
So it would come, Rebecca.
So just given the expedition of it all, I would say we would just come right back to this committee, because any recommendation from the FMS is going to be a subset of this committee anyway, and then have a subsequent conversation.
But let's be clear, and I know this is what you said, but they're not asking that WAFM be suspended for them. They're asking that WAFM be suspended branch-wise.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
And that's, David probably said it better than I did. I just think that's an immediate issue that we may have to have a special meeting for in some fashion, because I think they're expecting, and if they want to submit a formal request, fine, but it's going to be work that we're going to have to do in the next month, because otherwise you don't get it to the council or have it affect the next fiscal year, which for planning purposes does nobody any good. So that was my only issue about, we have this immediate critical issue that's outside the work plan, frankly.
Got it.
Agreed.
Right. So Tanya, and then back to David, I think. Tanya?
I have a question. If they reached out to you on a form for the emergency funding issue, I did hear them say that they didn't get any traction with anybody, but I wasn't asked. Were you asked on how to move this issue through to us?
Provided their fiscal staff.
No, but I'm
no, I wasn't, just to be perfectly candid. I was not aware of this issue until
it became an issue.
I was at spring training on a Friday evening, and I got an email from financial staff saying, just so you know, this request just came in. And spring training, if any of you care, was a week ago Friday, which was the first time that TICBAC was made aware, at least as chair of TICBAC. And then since then, I reached out to Judge Jacobson. Judge Jason, we agreed to get together. We had lunch. It was a candid discussion, but a face-to-face discussion where I think we both had an opportunity to share our perspectives and concerns directly. If it matters to any of you, we went through judicial college together. I know Morris well, and I just wanted to meet with him face-to-face rather than the filter of third-hand information. But nothing has been agendized yet. So I will note to his, I will get back to him. I won't be back till the end of the day today. I'll do it either tomorrow or Monday and say, here, we had general discussion. The $10 million is outside the purview of this committee. However, here's the process, just so he's informed, which he is. And additionally, are you making a request of TICBAC? And if so, please make that request so we can agendize it.
that'd be helpful.
The copy of the email that went out to Buddy is not a, I don't view that as a request to tick back. That was not addressed. I didn't get it.
I just want to know, I'm really just curious who they made the request to.
Yeah, I received it after it was sent out initially, and I asked somebody to please get it to me because it had not been transmitted to me. To be fair, my understanding, and I'm this is the problem when procedures are perhaps not followed precisely. The way my recollection of the procedure, what happened was it was sent out to all PJs, and the request was made for the PJs to then make sure that other people saw it. Well, that's called notice. So then I contacted Judge Jacobson, and I said to Judge Jacobson, could you please send it directly to me? I want to make sure I have what you have, Jody.
The three
so what was sent out was the proposal, a new WAFM formula based on population versus filing.
Right.
That was not the request to suspend the fifth year. So this morning at 9:30, Martin and I met with Judge Jacobson, and he made that verbal request of us as well, so I want you to be aware of that.
So that's joke at Judge Kaufman. So at FMS yesterday, that's exactly what happened. FMS yesterday, they in public comment, they came in and said, they said, here's what our ask was, and then they said, however, recognizing the difficulty in having that done with the time period, our secondary ask is this. So that was the first time, if we're talking about notice, that it was placed before any committee or advisory committee of this branch, beyond emails and other things that were floating around there. Judge Kaufman?
I mean, his request is twofold. One is to stop at the fourth year and then implement his...
Starts
with a new method. In the chain of discussion, it was distilled into stop.
Right.
This issue of the $10 million, though, and its scheme was not what was so.
That just came
so it's just like it's been an evolution. It wasn't
so
the.
So he wants that he had think you came up this way of disposing money. So all we're going to talk about is should we stop at the fourth year or not, correct? That's the only thing that we're assuming he's asking us.
No. Well, just the opposite, actually. The only thing he's officially asked was to, in fact, eliminate WAFM after year five and to come up with a new funding methodology involving population and judicial allotments. That was his request. That was the official request. And then as that request came out and started to be discussed, then there was mention made, well, we recognize it's going to take a lot of time to get through that, so how about if we stop WAFM right now? And that officially has not been part of public comment until yesterday at FMS, and it's my understanding this morning meetings with staff here, and then Chad Finke's comment before.
So Morris basically now, Judge Jacobson now says tomorrow, here's my request in writing. He makes it to us, and then who does he make it to, and what happens next? So are we required to do something, assuming that it has to get to the council at some point, because that's the final arbiter of what's going on. So where will your procedure as well?
Wouldn't it be sent to the council? The council determine where
to... Yeah, it should go to
you. So we don't have to...
And then he will delegate it to Judge Conklin.
Right.
So it has to go to EMP first. Maybe EMP will do something different. Judge Kaufman, I like the way you think. Maybe EMP is going to say, no, it goes here. If EMP assigns it to us, then we'll take action on it. That's probably a very good clarification. So that being said, I want to clarify my comment then that my communication with Judge Jacobson will be that your request needs to be submitted to E&P, not to this advisory committee. Mike Planet?
I just want to make a more general comment that the risk of making court-by-court exceptions is doesn't help the problem. At the end of the day, those of us that are underfunded courts are still going to be underfunded. Those of us that are underjudged are still going to be underjudged. Those of us understaffed are still going to be understaffed. And frankly, our analysis that are overfunded, with, you know, take it however you want,
less underfunded,
are going to be less overfunded. And so I think we should not lose sight of the large majority of underfunded courts and that our concerns just need to get lost in the discussion of trying to come to a solution for a court.
I agree with the comments.
Yes.
I appreciate the creative methodology that you came up with. I mean, I was in the federal court for 11 years before coming to state court. Everything has always been filed for publication by judge. Just the concept that we're talking about in the way up here.
I'm sure there are some aspects to it that are of concern to people.
So,
Mike,
right? I understand you're right. I'm yelling at you.
Judge Cope, pardon me.
We're good.
We are.
This has to start with DNC.
You're right.
And you don't have to even do anything.
No, I want to be responsive to the public comment today, and I'll reach out to them tomorrow and say, regarding the $10 million as procedures, regarding your request for your initial request of an alternative funding methodology other than WAFM, and what appears to be your public comment that WAFM be frozen for 4 years, that needs to follow the same procedure that everybody else follows. It goes to E&P.
There's a written form, and that's been used in all those boards, but it's been used for several years, a different form, and that needs to be filled out by their finance people and sent in, not an oral request.
And that's for the use of the emergency fund.
If we use emergency funds, wasn't that what they're also tapping in?
They just asked about the timing. The nature and structure that they described today is new for us and what we've heard. Because all we heard was, what is the process? Where's the form? And we provided that, not a description of some effort to try and deal with the donor court.
And I guess this speaks to why this needs to be in writing, because I didn't take their emergency fund request as representing only them. Theirs was, look, if you're not going to stop this, then you need to give the donor courts or some group of courts $10 million in fiscal relief to otherwise bridge the gap. So I wouldn't even characterize it as an emergency funding request. It was an option A, and if option A fails, then option B.
And if B fails, then C.
And that's why it probably needs to be in clear writing to E&P so that we understand the direction.
I'm a big fan of WAFM, that's just one personal view. But the other side of the coin is that if we have to be careful, this, you know, the DOF, legislature, governor are going to watch us, look at us, and say, you guys can't get your act together and you're fighting with yourselves. That is a disaster. I think we have to manage this politically. So it's fun keeping it in the family, but once it gets out and then there's this fight, and it may already be out there.
Every idea that comes up in an instant fashion, which I don't think may not have been what Mike meant. I think we need to be open to people having criticisms and discussion and how should we improve something or modify it and have a dialogue about that and the process we have established. I think kind of what we talked about here is this concept that is being discussed here in a lot of different avenues has not been brought up to most of us that have heard it more than 3 weeks ago, about or whatever it was, our fourth grade training. So we have to go through that process. So we had a meeting. It's now been discussed here. It was discussed on yesterday. There will be a next meeting as it goes through the process. I don't think anyone's trying to stymie that conversation. I am concerned about us saying, well, one court has an idea that they want to implement right now, and we're going to stop everything to suddenly schedule emergency meetings. We all have ideas of what we think might work better. The small courts have been trying to argue for well over a year to take a look at the BLS. It's been on a work plan. It's being reviewed. It's gone through a very structured way to do an analysis to see how does it impact everybody. Does it make sense? And we need to keep that going. And I think we need to be careful that because one group starts to make more noise because they can, that it drowns out multiple voices that have been trying to make a change about something for a long period of time.
Rebecca?
So just to further expand on what Jake and Judge Kaufman were saying, so there is a process to suggest change to WAFM. It came about when WAFM was put into place, but largely got buried, I think, in the paperwork and, you know, all of the different changes over the years or what have you. But we did discuss that yesterday, and I expect a revised version of that to come back to this group with outline timelines so people understand if you start in the typical process, if you start at this point, this is when you can expect it to go to judicial counsel based on all the different people that have to take a look at it. And so, but the reason I bring that up is I think it's really important to compartmentalize Alameda's conversation because the model that they sent out is what would be part to this process that we talked about yesterday. That's what would be submitted to that process. And I think really probably more specific and more immediate is their emergency situation and their request for pause or review of that of the fifth year. And so I would say we need to very much keep it compartmentalized with them as well so it doesn't all blend because there is a process to suggest change. And to that point, that would encourage anybody who has an idea that, you know, would make that formula better to submit it. So that will be coming back as well. And we had some conversation to, you know, nail down the dates a little bit tighter yesterday.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
So the hard part is that, and because we don't micromanage each other's courts, the hard part is that when somebody says, I'm in crisis, or the question becomes, and not to be disrespectful to any specific court, but was it their failure to plan, so then we can't move forward because of that, or was it anticipated on the horizon? And so that's what becomes a challenge. The more difficulty is that I think Judge Jacobson in particular felt like he wasn't being heard, that he thought he was talking to the right people, and he felt like he was against a brick wall. And so he did, because he said this before, what he did because he thought, okay, I care about the branch wide, but I care about the people that I'm serving in my county. And so I think there have been conversations with Judge Jacobson. I think that's why their request got tweaked and modified some, that you don't serve the branch as a whole well when you act the way you acted. And that's been talked about by several things. And I think that's a true statement. I think that this is an opportunity, though, where we actually can craft what we do to get all 58 counties saying the same thing to the legislature. And that is that you have underfunded the courts and left us to cannibalize each other, and that's wrong. And whether that's because, and it may not be this committee, it may not be any of those things, but to really say, we don't want to produce revenue. We don't want to have to live off of our own revenue. We want to be fully funded. WAFM was not an allocation model, it was a funding model. And we want you to look at that. And I think then you'd get all 58 counties saying, yes, let's look at those things where we're talking to our own legislatures, we're doing those things, we're accountable, we create some kind of area where we're really transparent about the money, and that we make that really clear to them. There are, you know, when they, and that the branch can take care of its own business as long as we're fully funded. If you don't, you know, then we end up doing this cannibalization where we point fingers at each other, and the courts that have been underfunded that are now looking like they're going to get above water a little bit because WAFM is being implemented more have to wait, even though, you know, we've been able to see. On the other hand, those that have been donor courts and those other things. So my feeling is that we really should take this opportunity to say, rather than be another time where we are dysfunctional and we look like we can't hold it together, that we find a way to make that be a really specific ask that every county can get behind. And I think we can do that, as whether it's this group or some other group.
And I appreciate that. I'm a good everybody. I do want to clarify one thing. And Judge Jacobs is not in the room. So I'm concerning the perception that he went to numerous people and were not heard. I can only speak for this committee. I can only refer many of us who are judges to the evidence code, for instance, that talks about hearsay, and represent. My best recollection is that no contact was made with this committee for consideration of his request.
Oh, I think that's true. I think there may have been a bit of, not flattering, it was like thinking they were talking to the right person, and they may not have been. I think that there was some miscommunication as far as those. I don't think that any, it's easy sometimes when you're sort of out there to kind of have us against
them. And I think they were feeling like they were an us against them.
Okay. Sam?
Yeah, just hearing about process and everything brings me back to law school, I guess, a little bit. But we're talking about the clock ticking, ticking, ticking. We're 11 weeks or so away from the new fiscal year. And, you know, courts need, I think courts thought they had certainty as they're facing July 1st of this year and hopefully planned for it. But to think that there would be a major, you know, flip of a policy just weeks away from a new fiscal year, you know, one group might not need the emergency plan, and a new group might pop up needing the emergency money.
Yeah, so again, and I appreciate that clarification and the clarification to me as well. So this will be, E&P will decide what to do with this. And Sam, I think your point is a very good one concerning times and procedures and deadlines and plans that have been made. But that's for E&P to decide, does this go right to tick back for a decision or do we wait and have it decided otherwise? It's not, we can't jump into this ring until we receive instruction, if at all, how to respond to it. But on the other hand, I don't want to ignore them at all, and they'll receive that direction, if not from kickback from staff to say, based upon public comment, any concerns goes to E&P and goes to the $10 million fund, here's how you do it. So that they're advised, if they are not aware of those procedures already, in writing, as to how to follow those procedures.
Okay. One last comment. I just want to follow up on Judge Heinrich's comment. Going back, as Judge McCabe said, when we were developing Laughlin to begin with, and that whole conversation about how far do we take a workload-based model that acknowledges we are not fully funded. You know, the comment we have made all along is that look at the number that it says you need, and if you had that amount of money, would it be enough? And with a very minor exception, the answer to that question has been, yes, I would have enough if I got the amount of money that it lists that I need. And so we all acknowledge, though, that we were at, I don't know, 65% fund. I don't know what the exact percentage was when we first started the whole process. That we are bringing people down to an average and bringing people up to an average. And it does not feel comfortable being brought down to a number, even though others are being brought up. But we put in a 5-year period to do that and said we would do as much as beyond that percentage. It was up to the other branches of government to help us go the rest of the way if they wanted to be within the trial court. And that's what we said at the time. And to Judge Heinrich's point, in 11 weeks, to Sam's point, we are at that spot where we have done all the things that we said we were going to do internal to the branch to create equity, which at that point, if it continues into year 5, should put us in exactly that position. We are all then going together to say, hey, maybe somebody's at 75% and somebody's at 71% and the average is at 72. But that band is so narrow, we are then going with essentially the same comment. And I think we need to be careful about being 11 weeks away from reaching that point and making it about faith that has some political implications for us in the other branches. We are very close to following through on that plan that we set. And going back to a comment earlier, look at what we did for the IMF. We set a plan together, everybody has worked together to get to a point. We now have an $8 million surplus in that fund in 3 years. So, you know, it's just something to think about as we go. We'll all be in the same place in 11 weeks.
So any other comments of either this? Oh, I'm sorry. Judge Johnson?
I'm really glad you said that you said, Jake, because that's the long view of where we are, and that's the long view, I think, of where we need to be. What we've tried to do is, as a branch, work with the other branches of government in good faith to correct historical inequity through WAFM. WAFM isn't perfect. Everybody knew that when we went into it, but that we have done what we said. And to jump off the cart at this late date, even everybody is experiencing discomfort with the thing, but with the bigger picture in mind, I think that would be a grave mistake.
Those are all solid arguments, but that skirts the major issue is whether or not we have this dialogue. And I'm just saying, through all this noise, it's important to be able to identify issues. And in this case, we have a court that's not just 3 weeks ago. Last year has poured over, and they've been talking to a variety of people. Have they done the right thing, et cetera?
you want, you need to do this, this goes to E&P, this goes to this, this comes to us. And then there's no confusion. Clarity is a good thing. We have that discussion, and you're right, Sam, that's, you've got compelling arguments why you shouldn't change course. But I don't think we should ever be afraid to have the dialogue. And I have faith that the collective will do the right thing in the end. And your position may very well carry the day, but we should still have that dialogue.
So the point isn't that you shouldn't have the dialogue. The point is that the dialogue should promote a follow-up, essentially, to what we have committed to in going back to the other branches of government saying, look, you know, we've been eating our own young here to make good on what we promised you to do, and where's our reward?
And in the end, and we've been doing that for how many years now?
Yeah.
And what has that done and got us, right? We have realities we have to deal with. And the reality is that we're not going to get a 20% increase to the branch, right, in this budget. It's not going to happen. It's just not. So what do we do in the interim? And then we have some folks that are telling us, well, we're more of a crisis stage on different ends, Alameda on one, Riverside on the other, and we're just kind of ignoring them. I don't think we can. I think we have to have that dialogue, and we have to discuss it. Maybe there's a solution.
I don't disagree with that. I think we're having that dialogue right now, but I think, on the other hand, it is critically important that we also recognize that we are all aware of and have been for 5 years, 4 years, procedures that should be followed so that we can take action on that dialogue. And to date, we have nothing before us to engage in formal dialogue. This is an item of general concern that this committee is just discussing right now. But E&P has not told us at this point that they want us to address anything because nothing's been presented to E&P. I thought I saw another hand. Any other items of concern that we haven't? The Interpreter Funding Working Group met this morning. Judge McCabe, you're the chair of that. I don't know if you want to give a brief overview of that. It was an educational meeting this morning for only purposes of talking to those few members on the working group whose goal is to address critical issues, I think, and Brian, correct me if I'm misstating this, related to the existing funds for interpreters and how those funds can perhaps, I hesitate to use the word methodology, but how there can be some more certainty, perhaps, and how those funds will be allotted for those courts that are asking for those funds.
Right.
So we're just on the groundwork and just starting the discussion. Judge Cope, did you have a comment or were you telling me?
No, I'm just apologizing for distracting him while you were saying something important.
Mike Planet?
Another kind of something else that's coming to this committee is the workload is whatever WAC stands for.
Right.
This week, and we have some draft adjustments to the RAS model that will be sent to the council, and our recommendations committee was to send it here also, even though it's in draft form, so we can kind of plug it into, we have that information available. So a couple changes made in light that we're recommending to the council. One has to do with the, help me out here, Mike. The Delphi aspect of the paying study. We kind of reassessed after looking at the question, the impact of that. And there was one other piece I just put in my mind right now. But
Work your value.
The recommendation was to go with the DOF standard, so we're consistent with the state aspect too. Bottom line is the recommendation results in a reduction of the FTEs. Under the model.
So where does that go? Just right to the council now?
Yeah.
It will go to the council. We're hoping that be able to send the draft to tick back so that we've got so the committee aware of that information.
Rather than going to the council and having to come back, we're going to parallel the two so that this committee has the earliest possible notice of the draft recommendations.
Okay.
At the same time, the council is considering them.
So just before we adjourn, one, thank you all for coming to our next meeting is June 8th. Mm-hmm. June 8th. I think I'm going to try to probably make that another in-person meeting. My guess is it's going to be a slightly longer agenda than this agenda, and will keep us here substantially for at least 4, if not 5 hours. I think it's Sacramento. Though
There's a possibility. I've been in discussion with some other members of this committee that we also maybe have a meeting later on in the year in Fresno. I know how much you all would enjoy that. So there's a possibility. In the summer. It'll be our August meeting.
So we're not in July.
All right, thank you all. Travel safe.
Thank you.
It's good to
see you. Yeah, we have a 2 o'clock for FCS.
We're going
to The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.